Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, my fine friends. Welcome to another edition of Rahalastapa. This week, very excitingly, with the wonderful and very funny and entertaining Annika Rice. I think you're going to enjoy this one, especially if you remember Treasure Hunt and Challenge Annika and all those things, but lots more cool stuff in there as well. Don't forget, we're doing live Rahalastapas at the Clapham Grand. May the 24th, one of the guests will be Sarah Kendall from Off of Taskmaster. May the 31st, in the afternoon, one of the guests will be Johnny Vegas. June the 7th, no guest booked yet. June the 14th, the crew from No Such Thing as a Fish. Will be joining me all together, as well as someone else. And on July the 5th, we will be talking to Robin Asquith from the Confessions movie and much more, plus another guest. There'll be 2 guests at each of these. You can either come to the Clapham Grand, buy an actual ticket and be socially distanced in the audience. Still plenty of tickets left for all of them. Or you can come online and watch it live streamed for a small fee. Or you can wait till it comes out as a podcast. It's up to you, but please support us and the Clapham Grand if you can after these difficult times. If you can't, the podcast will always come out for free eventually. Anyway, but you may miss some saucy, salacious moments that get edited out. So it's always better to watch it live if you can. And I'm glad to say you can do that from anywhere in the world with these shows, which is a very exciting development. Please go to richchang.com/gigs and you can see all the links and any more confirmed guests that might have arrived between the time of recording this and you hearing me and watching me say it. Anyway, let's sit back, relax and enjoy Rahalastapa with the absolutely amazing, of course I'm in love with her, Annika Rice. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who's still 2 weeks from a haircut. It's Richard Herring. Hello! Welcome, my fine friends, to another episode of Rich Herring's Let's Snooker Tomorrow podcast. Usually, if you're listening to the podcast, we're recording this on a Monday night, which is usually snooker night. There'll be a lot of very confused men in the chat room of the live Twitch feed, many of whom the only woman they've seen is Mia Levin, so they're going to have quite a time tonight. Though I was hanging around with Bernhard, the hereditary Prince of Baden, Prince Donatus of Hesse, and Philip, Prince of Hohenlohe-Langenburg at Prince Philip's funeral. We were the guys at the back. We were the last in the guest list. They all call it Rahalastapa, so we'll see if that catches on. Big news! This is the first episode of Series 21 of Rahalastapa. It's quite arbitrary where I put that mark now, but I think I'm going to make series of 25s. And this is something like, it must be number 326, something like that. So here we are. It's a new series. We've got a fantastic guest coming up. Let me tell you what's going on. I mentioned hair, and my son's just, who's 3 years old. He's not 28 years old. He's just got a hairbrush, and he wanted to brush my hair the other night. And this is how he brushed it. This is how much hair I've got, first of all, for the people who can view it. He brushed all of my hair right down in front of my face, and I tried to move it away, and he said, "Don't move it, Daddy, you look like a rock star." Now, I don't know how many rock stars my 3-year-old son has seen, and it is a little bit like what Kurt Cobain used to do, and it probably looks a bit like what Kurt Cobain looks like right about now. So, but I'm a rock star. That's official. It's all been sorted out. I've had my other weird podcast, Stone Clearings, had a bit of a disaster this week. A guy in my village has taken against me putting stones in cairns and threw quite a lot of them back onto the field. I think it's going to work out okay. You know, it's hard to take umbrage with him, really. It was quite an eccentric thing to do, but then taking all the stones off the field is quite an eccentric thing to do. So it's hard for the village to really get on side with either of us, I think, in this battle of the stones. But it was heartbreaking on Thursday when it happened. I'm coming to terms with it. I have been rebuilding this. The main cairn was the one that was started by Michael, who sadly died last year, who had meat on the field. He was like my sensei. So I was very upset about that one being destroyed. But I have rebuilt it as best as I can. All those stones you can see in that picture are gone now. In other bad news, I've been given officially a blue tick on Twitter, which I'd never have asked for. I didn't request it. They just sent me an email saying, "Well done, you've got a blue tick." I don't want a blue tick. I like the fact that for 13 years, people haven't been quite sure whether it's really me tweeting or just some very committed idiot who wants to pretend to be me and has somehow got away with it for all that time. I mean, very committed. Have you seen how much I tweet? It's insane. So it feels kind of sad to be accepted. I don't feel cool anymore. I don't know if you can get rid of a blue tick. And I don't know what the advantages of blue ticks are. Someone told me I could direct message anyone else with a blue tick. It hasn't been working for me. I've tried. Been trying to get some high-profile guests, and it hasn't worked. So I want that blue tick taken away, Ian Twitter. Right, while we're talking, remember we are doing some live gigs at the Clapham Grand, 24th of May, 31st of May, 7th of June, 14th of June, and 5th of July. I can announce two of the guests on the 31st of May, which is it's a bank holiday. It's a matinee, 2 p.m. Johnny Vegas will be joining me along with one other guest. And we only do one show a week, don't we? And on 5th of July, Robin Asquith from off of the Confessions of series, as well as many other dozens and dozens of films and TV shows, well worth following on Twitter for both seeing how amazing this man looks still today and also his many reminiscences about his work. He's going to be an excellent guest. So book those tickets if you go to richherring.com/gigs. You can book tickets. You can come to the theatre and watch it in person. With another 349 socially distanced people in quite a big theatre, so there'll be plenty of room. You don't have to be scared. Or you can watch it online. You can buy tickets for either of those at richherring.com/gigs. Give it a try. I'm feeling a lot better. I get a bit tired about 5 p.m. I was just telling my guest. But, you know, and then I do a podcast and I get perked up. So, my guest this week is probably best known for her appearance on the television quiz show Heads or Tails, hosted by Justin Lee Collins, of course. Will you please welcome the amazing, I can't believe she's here, I'm so delighted and excited, it's Annika Rice, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is. Hello, Annika.
Hello, how lovely to be here. Thank you very much for letting me into your boudoir.
It's very... on this so many, you've been in my boudoir so many times without knowing, Annika, that
I know.
It's love and the nation. It must be a very weird feeling to know how that's been going. Do you remember, before we get on to everything else, do you remember appearing on Heads or Tails with Justin Lee Collins?
No idea what you're talking about.
I remember. I found it because I Googled you because...
What is it even?
It was a game show where contestants had to flip a coin and guess whether it's heads or tails. And UK, I blogged about it and said then Annika Rice came on as some expert in luck. And the final toss, you advised the person whether they would go heads or tails. Do you remember it?
No.
I mean, you've worked with all the greats. You've worked with quite a lot of disgraced people because you've been working for so long. None of the women get disgraced, do they? But, you know, Justin Lee Collins has gone, you know, a little bit off the
radar. No, there's many people, there's many tracks of my career that I've just airbrushed out now because the people are literally in prison now.
That's not fair, is it? It's not fair that we lose Annika Rice just because of Rolf Harris.
That wonderful backstory. But anyway, I'm glad you found Heads and Tails. What the hell that is, I've no idea.
Oh, well, I'm delighted you've forgotten about it. And I'm going to be talking about a lot of your more obscure work as well as your better known stuff.
Can I take notes while you're doing that? It'd be very useful.
Yeah, so you can look at
save me doing any research.
Just go to IMDb. You can see all of the things you've done there. And then, you know, that might help you. It was I don't think it lasted very long, but I think it was an entire series, which it was sort of like Deal or No Deal, but it was just flipping a coin and then you won if you got it right.
I'm glad you've alerted to the nation to that, Richard, and I'm sure we're grateful. Thank you.
It was your best work, in my opinion.
Good. What was I wearing? Was I in a jumpsuit? What was it? What was the vibe?
I don't know what you... I did watch it, but I haven't rewatched it, so I don't... I was more interested in your skills of trying to guess whether it was heads or tails than objectifying you by looking at your clothing, Annika. I was looking at your brain at that point. And whether your brain...
Which you need a lot of brain for working out whether something is a or a ter.
I think you got it right. So, you know, there we go. So if that proves anything. I was Googling you on my... I was Googling you on my blog or searching you on my blog because there's one time we've crossed paths in our lives, which was on just by Barnes Bridge. I used to run a 6-mile run from my house in Shepherd's Bush right between the bridges of Hammersmith and Barnes and then back home again. And I passed you about the halfway mark where I'm usually the most tired. And I saw you. And then I think I really started to try and run fast to impress you.
Did I kind of recognition at all?
No, I was going to say, did you go home and say, I just saw Richard Herring on the...
No. I just say, this interview isn't going for... So far, heads and tails, nothing. Mm-hmm. You running past me, zero.
I mean, it was unlikely you would remember that, Annika.
Sometimes I see Claire Balding. and I used to have such a crush on Claire Balding. Right. And sometimes she's with her partner, Alice, and she's walking backwards because that's the way she rolls, Claire Balding.
Okay.
She read about it or saw it on some Japanese something or other. So she actually walks backwards. Now, had you been doing something like that, Richard?
I was running. Did you go home? I don't know who he was. I saw a guy down by Barnes Bridge. He was the fastest runner I've ever seen for a short, fat man.
I did actually.
Yeah, good.
I'm going to actually now acquiesce and just pretend I know what the hell you're talking
about. Thank you. When you said sometimes I see Claire Balding, I wondered whether she was really there or whether it was just like in Sixth Sense or something that you just sort of see Claire Balding.
I did tell my entire family that I'd seen this astonishingly good-looking man running along the riverbank.
That's very nice. It was very exciting for me to see you, and that you must have that all the time. I didn't bother you, like I'm sure many people do, and I didn't shout out, oi, rear of the year at you or anything like that. I don't know what people shout. What do they shout? Oi, get in your helicopter. What do they shout at you? Jumpsuit.
Stop the clock. Stop the clock.
Challenge Annika. I didn't
even
say...
Now. It's funny that it is even now. I once got flashed on the riverbank, and this man... flashed me. This was quite a few decades ago in the 80s. It was the 80s flashing.
Good.
And he flashed me and was fumbling around down there, flashing me, and looked up, saw it was me and went, oh no, it's Annika Rice. And he tore off into the bushes.
You know, in the old day, I mean, I don't approve of flashing and it's a terrible thing to do, but in the old days, at least men had the decency to do it in person rather than just text the pictures of their penises.
I found it quite charming.
It was an old school.
I shouted after him, sorry, I've ruined your flash.
Oh dear. Well, look, the first thing I was surprised to discover today as I was researching you is that your name is not Annika Rice, and I'm very, very upset about that. And it's destroyed.
My fault. Not my fault at all. When I worked as a journalist in Hong Kong for a few years, and there I was just Annie Rice, very happily. When I came back and got the job on Treasure Hunt, I got a very stiff letter from Equity saying you cannot trade under the name of Annie Rice because there's an 80-year-old actress in Bristol also called Annie Rice. Sorry, fair enough, whatever. I hadn't been on telly in Britain. I didn't really know the fame game. I just thought, I'll choose any old name. So I went, just call Anne. They said, sorry, the computer says no, there's already an Anne. Except in those days, it wasn't computers. Obviously, they had to shuffle through files for about 5 hours. I went, Annabelle, Anushka. I mean, this went on for days because I didn't want to suddenly become Prudence Longbottom or something. I wanted to be able to still be Annie Rice. His sister was called Annika. Right. So I just thought, that'll do. And as it happens, it's made me slightly Swedish in people's eyes. So I'm quite liking that.
That's what I 100% thought. I thought there's some... And I think, you know, I think if you'd chosen any other name, there's just something about the name because it's so... It's not unique. Obviously, it is a name that other people have, but it's unusual enough. I mean, challenge Annie or challenge any of the other ones. It wouldn't be as good. Annika is a great name. You know, your Annika is like your one name, and we know who we're talking about. Your Cher, your Madonna.
I didn't think I'd actually have to be called Annika, but I did. I mean, Equity were on it the whole time. Yeah. So, you know, in the first series of Treasure Hunt, Kenneth always says, Annie, are you there? And then, you know, you can obviously hear someone telling him off because halfway through he goes, Annika. And then we got the hang of it. And now I have a name. And actually, my passport is even in the name of Annika Rice by mistake because someone just gave me one.
Someone just saw that. That's not Annie Rice, that's Annika Rice. They saw your photo.
But it is very confusing, the whole thing.
But I think it's just an accidental stroke of genius. You know, I wonder, I'm sure you'd have been successful and I'm sure you'd have had a great career regardless. But I think that moment out of everything, that choice of Annika, because it gives you that little, she's come over from Scandinavia. There's a little bit of something in there.
I like the Scandinavian vibe a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm there with ABBA. I like the thought of it a lot. And as you say, challenge Jean hasn't quite got the ring, I don't think.
So it's amazing bit of synchronicity or what's the word? I don't know. It's lucky is what I'm saying.
But it's good because when my kids were little, they knew that if anyone rang on the telephone, because in those days one had a telephone, a landline, and said, hello, could I speak to Annika? They'd go, fuck off, because they knew it was a journalist, because no one ever calls me Annika. So if anyone ever rang me at home, it was just not someone you ever wanted to talk to. So they were very well trained.
So there was a lot of newspaper stories. Stories about Annika's foul-mouthed children.
Absolutely out of control. No, they absolutely knew. That was the filter, the word Annika. If anyone said Annika, we knew foe.
See, it's good. And you're a person who, we'll come on to it later, but you're a person who's had lots of different identities as well. And the thing, again, I was surprised to hear about you, because I feel like the thing you'd say about you, you're very upbeat, you're very positive. When I was at university, there was a comedy troupe there, had a song about you going, Annika Rice, I want to thank you for being so nice. Oh, Annika, Annika Rice. And I still remember it. It was a lovely song, but it was just about you being lovely and nice and charming.
Very chuffed when I did Panto in Brighton once, and you'd go into the pub and I was rhyming slam in Brighton, Panto land. Because, you know, that people would go and say, could I have a gin, a tonic and plenty of Annika, which was nice.
Okay, that's good.
Which I was charmed by.
Yes, that's, you know, that's about the best you could get out of that. I don't think there's nothing else to spring to mind. Terribly nice would be the other one, of course. But I feel like, you know, your childhood was a little bit less happy than I would have imagined, or you were put upon by to do. You had to bring up your little sister almost because your mum wasn't around too much. Is that right?
No, it was an unusual upbringing. I was very much the family elastoplast. But, you know, lots of people, you know, and it's different times. It was just a very different type of childhood than, for example, you know, the childhood I've been lucky enough to give my kids, where you're so engaged with your children. You know, back in the 70s, honestly, did I have any parents? I've no idea, literally no idea. You just got on with it. And I was very independent and, you know, good thing, really, because I don't think I'd have done anything if I'd been happily ensconced with the chocolate cake in the kitchen. I just think I'd have just rolled over and said, could you tickle my back, please?
Yeah.
So as it happened, that edge, that feeling of the rug being pulled out of your, from, you know, your feet the whole time,
yeah,
and jeopardy, again, it's something I talk about a lot because I think jeopardy is really good for you. And I really think as human beings, we respond to that.
Sure.
Actually, not too much. I'm not talking.
Well, dangerous necessarily, but yeah. I mean, I think that your career is very much about chucking yourself into whatever's coming up,
wholeheartedly,
and hoping for the best.
Yeah, just hoping for the best, getting on with it quickly. Honestly, if you honestly had a problem, Richard, and said, "Could you sort this out?" I'd be actually on the phone sorting it out as we're having this conversation, because I do everything in the complete now, because that was how my childhood was. It was sure. It just had to be the now.
Yeah.
It was a very weird scene. And funnily enough, it gave me a weird skill,
yes,
which I've used in my career. So yeah. I think a bit of fear, a bit of jeopardy is no bad thing.
Sure. And also we have something in common, although my phase came a little bit more embarrassingly late, in that you also shoplifted as a teenager in an attempt to get attention, really. Which
I really hope that if I got caught shoplifting, I would be taken home in a police car and I could go, "Hello, everyone. It's me, no Annie." But I never got caught because I just got too good at it. And yeah. I never stole things, can I just say, that I wanted. I mean, they were just anything to, mostly very large bras. I loved stealing bras for some reason. I mean, and huge bras, you know, comedy bras.
Sure.
I kind of thought if I'm going to be arrested, it would be really cool to, when they pull it out of my bag, just a bra that's, you know, size 84 double Z. Anyway, I never got caught until eventually once I did get caught. And then, you see, my survival and the jeopardy thing kicked in. And instead of giving my name, I gave the name of this heinous girl in my class who bullied me. So I just gave her name and her address so that the police car would go around to speak to her parents. So when the crunch came, I tried to protect myself.
Yeah, that's good. And that's a good piece of advice. I mean, we should all do that. You should put a name out and we'll all do that when we're caught. I think
if someone's been really horrible to you.
Yeah.
Girl Wendy made my life such hell, and I was so unhappy at school. I mean, I used to just go into the woods near the school and just cry all the time. And, you know, I felt she deserved a slight police record.
Yes, I think she did.
I think she's got now.
I hope she's in prison for your crimes, Annika.
Do you think she is?
I hope that was the first strike, and then she did something else and went right.
Imagine them going around and saying, "Hello, now we think that Wendy's been stealing brassiers."
So it's hard to believe you that Annika Rice was a terrible thief and a liar, putting other people into prison. But it's good. I think the thing about you, and I think the reason, one of the reasons people like you, is because you seem like, you know, in Treasure Hunt especially, and maybe challenge Annika a little bit, it was all of this very, you know, goody-goody, very nice person. But you suspected underneath there was at least something a little bit naughty in whichever direction that you wanted to take that. But I think that is probably an accurate representation of you.
I think a slight undercurrent, definitely. And yes, I will go to to ends, to many ends, to champion the underdog. And, you know, it's nice that you said you think I'm nice, because I like to think that I will always champion the underdog.
Yes.
And the Wendy's of this world I will put in prison. That's all I'm saying.
I think with that, you know, there is. Although, you know, you sort of think from other people, you would, I'd get her on and we'd find out she had some terrible story in her childhood that had made her behave badly. But I think that kind of subtle revenge, because you're very clever. And I think, again, that's probably something that, you know, people didn't appreciate or didn't want to appreciate early on, because they saw you as this giggly girl running around in a helicopter.
Well, that is very... very strange, because I started my whole career at the BBC as a trainee journalist.
Sure.
So I did 2 years at the World Service working on programmes like The World Today and Outlook. And I had a news, a career plan that was as a journalist working in a newsroom. And I went out to Hong Kong from, you know, I'm still only about 19 because I slightly lied about my age.
Lying again.
Last lie I'm going to actually admit to. I did, when I got the job at the BBC, I slightly lied about my age because I actually did my A-levels when I was about 16 or 17. So I had to pretend I was, you know, 18, 19, 20. Anyway, so I had this career as a journalist working in Hong Kong in the newsroom, and then as a newsreader when the newsreader was ill one night and someone said, can anyone do newsreading instead? Can anyone stand in? I went, yes, I can do that. Oh, years of training at the BBC. So I became a newsreader. And so my whole thing in this extraordinary career in Hong Kong was as a very serious young girl.
Yeah.
You know, doing my research, writing the news, presenting the news, all that sort of thing. So Treasure Hunt was like a really weird swerve curve that my career took. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into at all, Richard. I, you know, no one had even heard of Channel 4 at that time. It hadn't even started up. So I went for this audition for this weird new adventure game show. I've never been in a helicopter. No one checked whether I'd mind being flung around without a door on. I mean, I just had no idea about it. And I had to do the audition with a load of sports blokes like Emlyn Hughes and Daley Thompson. And they were all running around and the cameraman just couldn't keep up with them because they were so competitive. And we just had a bit of a laugh. And I heard him say to the producer, oh God, it'll have to be Annie. She's literally the only one I could keep up with because she's behind me. So I got this weird job on involving a helicopter and running around with maps, but I was still quite serious. And for the first few programs, the producer would say to me, can you speak a bit more? You know, sorry, I'm just changing. Can you still see me?
We can see.
So for the first, you know, couple of programs, I didn't really say much because, again, I was being quite bookish and looking at all the maps and going, yes, I think we're about 32 degrees east of whatever. And then I suddenly thought, what the hell? And I just let myself go. And there followed, you know, 6 or 7 years of just chaotic glory. Actually, it was such real laugh.
It's a great show. Well, and you're very smart. I watched one today and you are smart and you're chipping it. They're saying stuff and they're not really listening to you, but you're often giving the answers, or you say you're confirming facts and stuff, and you haven't got any books and stuff. You're just working for your brain. I'm now just trying to picture the show with Emlyn Hughes in it, and I don't think it would have been successful.
Well, it's actually a French format. It was done in France with this very hunky bloke called Pierre Dieuleveur.
Right.
Who actually got killed. Oh. He was actually shot at by gorillas. Not
during actual treasure hunt, though, surely.
Yeah, filming a treasure hunt in France. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, he's not with us any longer. It's quite a dangerous programme to do because you are just, you know, we did loads of programmes overseas.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
it's quite risky. I ended up in hospital quite a few times.
Yeah, well, the one I saw, I watched one, there was just one on a website, and it happened, and it was just complete coincidence, but it opened up, and you were in Somerset, and you were sitting at the top of Cheddar Gorge, and it was in 1984 or 5, I guess. I would have been living in Cheddar at that time. As I was saying before, I have no memory to you. I have no memory of Treasure Hunt coming to Cheddar, but I must have been very excited about it. But
if you were 16, you were doing something unspeakable.
I was. I really wasn't. And, you know, and just the fact that you would have been in the same village as me would have been very exciting for me. But you'd hurt your ankle. So you showed Kenneth Kendall your hurt ankle right at the beginning that you'd hurt in the previous episode. And also your trousers, you were running all the time and your trousers had ripped. And you're trying to cover up your ripped trousers.
So well, really, at that time, television programs were largely, you only saw people from the waist upwards, you know, behind a desk or something. Yeah. And this really was so groundbreaking. It was the first sort of reality TV show where there was no script or nothing. You just went off and did your own thing. And so if you, one program I get knocked over by a horse. I'm actually unconscious. And somehow the adrenaline kicks in. Someone, I think Graham, the cameraman, slaps me around the face a bit and we carry on. But I end up in hospital afterwards. And that often happened. But during the show, we never stopped, Richard. No. Just kept running. Well, it was bizarre.
It seemed incredible that the technology was good enough to be able to keep the link going. I was just thinking, well, did you have to stop and retake stuff if the link broke down, or did it always work?
I could barely hear what was, you know, the instructions being gave to me, but it taught me, you know, a whole style of programming. So that's why the crew becomes so important. You know, my style of presenting is very much to involve, Dave the sound man on Jan and Janica, or, you know, Frank and Graham on Treasure Hunt and Keith the pilot, because, you know, I realised we had to just somehow keep things going, even if we had no idea where we were meant to be going, because we didn't stop.
And did you really not know? Had you not rehearsed where you were going?
No. Not at all. And Kenneth was the same. Kenneth. We were very Boy Scoutish about the whole thing. And if we ever found out one thing, we came clean and they changed the whole course.
Right.
And we really didn't want to know. And how lovely to get off to work and not know what you're doing. There's no prepping. You just roll.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be the, I mean, trouble is I had so many years of working like that. I can really only work like that now. Right. So that's why I devised the series of the challenge, where you literally, again, had no idea what was going on. You suddenly had to build a community centre or something. I like that feeling of jeopardy back to my childhood.
And I don't know whether people are aware that that's your fault. So Challenge Annika was, you created the format and you've sold the format all over the world. So this is, again, that's your brainchild again. It's been a very successful show here. You chose to end it, right? Rather than the other way around.
Yes, I chose to end it. To be honest, we had done over 60 projects. You know, we'd done some projects like the Romanian orphanage one, for example, you know, really stressful, and I'm still involved with all these projects 30 years on. You know, they weren't quick fixes, and so each project is a huge part of my life. And so after we'd done over 60 projects, I didn't really have any space in my life to take on any more projects, because they all had a life after the challenge ended.
Sure.
And sometimes they were really risky. I mean, we went to Croatia, for example, post the Homeland War, and we were doing up a village school in a war-torn, it was absolutely, you know, bombshell, this whole village. And we had Serb snipers trained on us the entire time we were filming. We had to be protected by the United Nations. And, you know, we all left notes for our loved ones in our hotel room, because we just thought, you just get one stray bullet and that could be us. The clever thing about Challenge really was, though the programme went out, you know, before Noel's house party on the Saturday evening, BBC One prime time, but actually the subjects we were dealing with were really quite serious, some of them.
Yeah.
And I think the skill of the show was that we gave the BBC, we presented to them a fun, you know, hour-long light entertainment programme that sat with a family, but you could take it at many different levels.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there was this fantastic legacy of each of the projects. And because the format's been sold around the world, there's hundreds of projects all around the world.
Yeah.
So, amazing. You know, it's sort of my life's work, sort of what I do now even.
It's incredible. I mean, it's Do you think it's down to you, Annika? Do you think that if it had been me running in and going, come and help me with this, people would have gone, nah, I don't think I will.
Done it for you, Rich.
They wouldn't have done it for me. They'd have done it for you. I mean, there's something about you that is very appealing, and I think it's more, you're a very beautiful woman, and you're still an incredibly beautiful woman. I don't know how this is possible. You haven't changed at all. But there's a sort of life force in you. I think when you look at the photos of you in that time, especially, it's just the sort of this personality comes out, and I think.
Well, the thing is, I genuinely feel very passionate about things.
Yeah.
And I just think if you've got passion, then people will follow, you know, yeah. Because why wouldn't you? I mean, it was amazing that the thousands of volunteers who did just drop their lives to come and help us. And, you know, I will be forever indebted to all those people because it really was quite extraordinary. And we really felt after we'd done all these series that we ought to give it a break anyway, just to sort of let it rest and calm down. And I had to say hello to my children again. Hello, sons. I'm your mother.
I think every single man who took part in Challenge Annika only did it in the hope that you might. It gave them a chance that you might marry them, and that's the only reason they did it.
And Richard, then that's not true. You couldn't even be asked as a 16-year-old to turn up on a treasure hunt. I mean, you couldn't even be bothered.
I was too nervous to do it. I'm amazed I can talk to you now. I'm amazed I've got through this far.
You were doing something unspeakable behind the the tour, wherever that is, the Glastonbury tour.
You know of my reputation. I do like a pile of stones. But that's definitely true. So, there's so much I want to talk to you about, and I don't want to get too hung up on certain things. But I wondered, just looking through the IMDb again. You're on Blankety Blank about four or five times. Do you remember being on Blank? I really like getting involved in that part of...
Blankety Blank, because it was... was it Les Dawson or Terry Wogan who did it in those days? Again, it was early 80s.
Yeah.
So I just started doing Treasure Hunt. I was really quite overwhelmed by this whole fame game because, you know, it wasn't like, you know, nowadays a lot of people just want to be famous and rich. And I came to the whole career thing, that part of my career, in such a roundabout way via News and Current Affairs. So I was absolutely like a rabbit caught in the headlight with this fame game, I have to say. But I was so thrilled to be asked on Blankety Blank. I remember I asked my dad along and we just went, oh my God, I've made it. This is it. This is actually, I don't want to do anything else. I just want to be on Blankety Blank. There's certain things in your life, I bet you feel the same, where you really think, oh my God, this is it.
I guess in the 1980s, Blankety Blank would have been it.
No, but, yeah. To no one else, but to me, it was up there. To me, I can't even think what the equivalent now would be, Pointless or something.
I think Taskmaster, which I was on, was my one. So I like, once I did Taskmaster, I just thought, I don't care now, I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah, actually, I have to say, all I want to do is Taskmaster. I'm going to
suggest you to Alex Horn for Taskmaster, because he does sometimes ask me. And you would be a mate. You'd be too good. You'd be too good for Taskmaster. You'd win by miles.
That's just my kind of dream, because I just love, my favourite things. I've just done Bake Off, for example.
Yes.
And my favourite thing is, forget the baking, but, you know, I had this thing that I would, for some reason, when they rang and said, what do you want to cook or bake or whatever you call it? I had no idea. Because they'd only given me one day's notice. Obviously, someone fell ill or something. So I had no time to even think about it. So I looked at a photo across the room of me abseiling from a helicopter. And I suddenly thought, no, that's what I'll do. I'll be in a helicopter, be abseiling down onto a mountaintop. My sons will be in the helicopter. And in my head, I went off onto this... Was I on drugs at the time? Honestly, I wasn't. I just thought of this idea. But then the whole joy was working out the construction of it rather than learning how to bake a cake.
Right. But you won though, right? So you still won.
But I only won because of that portrait I painted of Paul Hollywood.
Well,
I knew when he saw that portrait I'd won. It was only the first task. He wanted to take it home afterwards.
Right.
And I wasn't going to give it to him unless I won. So I had it. But what you didn't see on Bake Off, behind Paul's portrait. I'd done one of Prue's. So I whisked off Paul's, and there was a stark naked one of Prue, just with red glasses on. And they cut that. And I just thought that was just not appropriate for a family show.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame. That sounds very good.
I mean, Prue is. Don't you love Prue? I mean, I have such fierce love for Prue. I nearly couldn't operate during that show.
It's a very good show, and you know, it's and you recreate. You were running. You ran in your treasure hunt gear, didn't you, in the beginning? So it was looking for the Ted.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Again, pretend. See, this is like the other thing I was going to say is that you're in that spit. There's a spitting image sketch about you. How did you feel about being in spitting image?
Oh, my God. Well, there was a period of my life when I hardly dared turn the telly on because there would be Bobby Davro or someone running through shop in a treasure hunt jumpsuit doing something, or there'd be a Carling Black Label ad with the crew flying off over a mountain and the people turning to each other and saying, I bet she drinks Carling Black Label. I didn't even actually have to be on telly myself because I was on telly. And then the ultimate was, I was 8 months pregnant at the time and I wandered through and the telly was on and I suddenly heard that bloody helicopter, and that was always the sign that there was going to be another sketch, and it was spitting image. And I'm going, Kenneth, I'm going to have a baby. And it's honestly the funniest thing because Kenneth then gets out of bed in his pajamas, puts on a headset and starts directing me to the hospital. And then there's this whole thing of me running around going, I'm having a baby, where's the hospital? And then eventually after chaos and really very funny, out come a film crew. I give birth to the film crew.
As well as a baby. Yeah, it's quite graphic. Is that basically your birth canal is depicted?
Yes, foam. Kenneth's saying yes, Annie, you're there in the birth canal. You're just coming out now.
We see it coming out, which is, you know, I think your birth canal might be the only one that's appeared on prime time. Admittedly,
can you imagine? Because my kids were very little during the high all this sort of time of my career, so, and I totally protected them from TV. I mean, they've honestly never seen an episode of Treasure Hunt until very recently.
Right.
Some found it on YouTube and went, what the hell is that? You're being arrested. You're landing on a submarine. Anyway, but for them to, I did some stand-up quite recently, and I wanted to use a clip from it. So I showed them the clip of me giving birth, and I mean, they were white-faced. It's quite a shock, isn't it?
I think that to see your mum in that, you know, and then just, and it's sort of yourself as well, because there is a baby involved in there. So it's, I wrote for Spitting Image. I didn't write that one, but
did you?
Yeah, towards the end. It was just the last couple of series, so it would have been after that. But we hardly had anything on. But we did get a couple of bits on. But yeah, I think I would have gone that's a bit far. But it's, as you say, it's a funny sketch. But
I hadn't seen it for all those decades, and seeing it again now, it's honestly, I hadn't quite realised, because when you're living in the middle of something, you don't realise how very strange your life is.
Sure.
Because it's like that every day, Richard. Something very strange is happening to you every single day in some shape or form. I mean, it really was an absolutely very strange 20 years or so. While I was in it, I sort of just got on with it. And it's only now, looking back, that I'm going, oh my God, that's verging on the, you know, I don't know what.
But also, you sort of, unusually, I think, you sort of walked away from it yourself, obviously to go back to, like, art and to your family and to be a mum. But you actually sort of made the decision to, because you were on everything. You did the holiday program. You did, you know, you did. There were several other shows
Richard,
you were in.
You're so well researched.
Of course, but I remember as well. But you were like a huge star, and most people kind of wait for things to go wrong or hope things go right. But you made that decision to walk away. And was that because it was too weird as well? Was fame too weird to have a normal life?
Fame's too weird. Because remember, it wasn't something I was craving and wanted, you know. I started off from a very different point in my life. Fame was too weird. It was all too intense. I had very small children. I had paparazzi the whole time on the doorstep. I couldn't take them out of the house. I used to have a box of £5 notes by the front door, and when there were, you know, a gang of them out there, I'd go out and say, listen guys, do you have a family? And they'd go, yeah, got a kid. I said, when you go home at night and they say, hey, did you have a nice day, daddy? Do you say to them, I have just totally fucked up some young mum's day when she's out and about with her children? And I said, look, I'm going to give you some fibres. Go and have a beer, but leave me alone, because what you're doing is just abuse. And honestly, it was awful. But I spent so much time doing that that I just thought, I'll just stop working. I'll just become unfamous. That's the only way I can actually have privacy for myself to be a mum and bring up my kids without us always... you know, we'd get out of a cab and somehow there'd be a photographer there. It really freaked me out.
Sure.
And it got to the point where, you know, there was one occasion where I actually grabbed someone's camera and threw it to the ground. And then all the punters were standing around going, go on, Annika, go on, beat him up. And it was before camera phones. Otherwise, that would have, you know, been quite a public episode, I guess. Anyway, to my mind, it was a very easy decision to make. I just thought, I'll go away. I'll do something completely different. And I went into the BBC, who had a very successful Saturday night programme, and said, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to say goodbye. Sure. Just for a little while. And actually, it sort of went on quite a long time because I just needed that gap. So I took myself off to art school and did completely different things. But what I didn't realise, of course, Richard, is you don't become unfamous. It doesn't quite work like that. Still, wherever we went, it was just I wasn't newsworthy anymore.
No. But you're also so recognised. You know, you literally look the same now as you did then. I mean, you could try and make yourself look a bit different, but you look the same.
I had wigs. I did, but you don't want to go out. You don't want to go out with your kids in a dark wig. You know, you just don't want them to feel there's some sort of shame around your life. You know, I wanted us to just go to school on the bus and, you know, blah, you know.
Yeah.
So I did pretty well at that. And honestly, when they were little, they thought I was a lorry driver, I think, because they remembered vaguely I used to be in a truck on Challenge.
Right.
Because they used to play in the truck and on the buggy, you know, when they were very little. And so I think they just thought I was sort of some sort of lorry driver. And then I was at home a bit more, which was really nice. And then I started painting pictures, which was fine, you know.
Yeah, well, that's great. And now, as you just mentioned, you were, before lockdown, doing stand-up, which I think, you know, the subjects you have and the life you've had does make a lot of sense. And so you've done one stand-up show about what happened to your Madame Tussauds head, because you were in Madame Tussauds for a long time, and they they swapped you over between Treasure Hunt and Challenge Annika, and you were still there with the different costume on. And then obviously, once you're not on TV, they get rid of the
body. They just melt you down.
Yeah.
Channel 4 came to interview me about the legacy of being a Madame Tussauds statue, and I was really chuffed, and I was quite smug talking about how lovely it was to hang in the foyer. I was the first statue anyone saw. I was hanging on a rope ladder in a jumpsuit with a paintbrush in one hand or whatever. And they went, "And how do you feel now you've been melted down?" And I didn't know. I did not know at that point I had been. It was like tumbleweed floating across the sitting room. I went, oh, well, you know, one has one's innings. Thinking, shit, what have they done with my head? Because I didn't care about the body, because obviously the body can be melted down and be Kim Kardashian's left buttock, you know, whatever. But you do worry where your head is somehow, because... Yeah. And if you Google Wookiee Hole, ladies and gentlemen, you just go onto your search engine and just, you will see, if you put Wookiee Hole, Madame Tussauds, you will see rows and rows and rows of decapitated heads just sitting on these shelves. And it really, I decided that's just not appropriate. And so I did this whole stand up, which was, I wanted to find my head, and it was called Help My Head's in Wookiee Hole. And it became a kind of search for my real head, you know, because I'd had such a sort of weird life. So, you know, it was a fun show to do, and I did it at the Backyard Comedy Club. Sure. But the weird thing is, I never found my bloody head. Madame Tussauds won't divulge where my head is. And people on Twitter were really being helpful and saying, "I swear you might be in Blackpool somewhere. I think I saw you next to the Green Goddess and Barry Manilow," or, you know, whatever. There were sightings of my heads all over the UK. Even some thought that they might, you know, there's places like the Imperial War Museum where they have people in trenches. And someone really genuinely thought they might have put me in a trench with a pith helmet on or something. Anyway, it was just getting out of control. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, though, I mean, you're a very nice woman, Annika. I hate to tell you what's happened to your head, but it's obvious what's happened to your head. Well, someone's got it in their house and they've dressed it up as you. They said there's a bloke in Japan who's made his own Scarlett Johansson robot that looks just like her, that, you know, he looks creepy. And you know what he's up to with that robot on his own.
I care about that head.
That head is being abused by someone.
I loved the beautiful young man who made my head, because you have millions, you have many hours of fitting your head with calipers, measuring every bit. And it was such an intimate thing I had with this man who made me. And, you know, I want my head back, Richard. I just want it back.
I think he's got it. I think that guy's got it. I heard that he had a photo of... Does he have a photo of the head by his bed? You met his next-door neighbours. He's got the head. He's got you in the little... He's got a special Annika Rice room. Dressed up in your jumpsuit, and he goes in there. The body hasn't been melted down. There's some of it's been melted down in little places to help.
There's something quite not right about the whole thing.
There is. So I think I didn't want to tell you it, but, you know, I'm a man. I know how men's brains work. And it disgusts me. But what a brilliant subject. But I love that. It's a perfect show. So you only did it at the back. You're going to take it to the Edinburgh Fringe if that ever happens.
Well, I did it at the Backyard Comedy Club, and it was the second one I'd done. The first one had been about my secret agent, Clemmy Hart. It was a piece about her that Radio 4 came and recorded, because back in the day, during this period where I wasn't working officially anymore, I still needed sort of some kind of representation, because obviously the inquiries still came in. So I invented, I looked around for a secret, you know, someone who could really represent me and look after me and know me well and not send me off for ridiculous jobs, because I kept getting fired by all my, I went through four agents in a row and they all fired me because I just didn't want to do the work they were offering me. I mean, one job. Do you know who Mark Curry is?
Of course I know who Mark Curry is.
Well, there was a cookery program, Curry and Rice. And this agent couldn't understand that I did not want to do this cookery program. I mean, I love Mark Corrie, but I did not want to be stranded down the M3 in a hangar where they were going to film it. I wanted to actually to spend my children's childhood with them, not Mark Corrie. Anyway, that was the final straw. That was the last agent that sacked me because I just wouldn't say yes to any work. So I decided to find the perfect person myself. And in the end, it was me, and Clemmy became my alter ego, and I had a lot of fun with her. It became like sort of performance art because she was very popular, and people loved dealing with her, and she had adventures, Richard.
I know, I've heard about this, and my wife, who's had you on her Drunk Women Solving Crime show, says hello, Katie Wilkins.
Oh!
And so she told me about this story as well. So I find this, so people, it was mainly by email, right, but you would also put on a Scottish accent, which I love. That's the kind of thing I do when if you had to talk to her on the phone.
No, I mean, she had I had to give her a whole backstory because she was so popular. She had a puppy called Kenneth. And she was a tireless charity campaigner because I had to invent reasons, because it started fine on email, because back in the day, people were quite polite and formal on email. So it was, "Dear Clemmy, I understand you represent Annika, blah, blah, blah." That was sort of fine at that stage. No one ever said, "Hey, Clem," which happened quite soon after. "Let's meet for a drink after work. And then would you like to join the BBC netball team?" And the thing is, because Clemmy was a laugh on the emails, producers and production companies loved dealing with her because they used to stuff the agents. And here suddenly there was this breath of fresh air who was completely, I mean, strictly, I remember back in the 2000s, you know, asked me to take part. And she just sent one line back, "Have you seen her dance?" And then another and then another line later when they were still pursuing it, saying, "Could she have two teachers, do you think, one on each side for ballast and support?" And she just gave the sort of answers that left, and no one had any to come back to, really. They didn't know how to follow it through. But she was popular, and it got very difficult. I had this huge Sasco wall planner up with people in the house who had to go off at various times of the day and be Clemmy. And I had this, I was quite useful because my boyfriend at the time was a spy. So if it got really tricky and they needed to know the price for a corporate event or something, we had a clue. I'd say to him, "Could you today, your job is to find out what Davina McCall might get for this sort of job." And he'd go, "How do I do that?" And I'd go, "You're a spy, for God's sake. Go and spy."
Are you sure he was a spy? Because he might have just said he was a spy. Spies aren't meant to say they're spies, Annika. He might have just said he was a spy to impress you.
Do you think?
Yeah.
He impressed me for about 7 years.
It's good. It's good work.
That was a waste of time. I thought I was living with James Bond. Anyway, and I had lodgers in the house, and they were brilliant. They were really fun. They were in their early 20s, and they had full-time jobs, but they were very up for being Clemmy if a contract had to be handed over, or they, you know, someone said, "Clemmy, we really must meet you for a quick drink just to go through the schedule." So I had to brief them at breakfast, and then they'd go off and be Clemmy after work and come back. And it was just fun.
And how did you get, caught, or did you just give up? Did you give up on this, another lie, another subterfuge?
It got Christ? The money started pouring through the door because Clemmy said that she was this charity campaigner and she couldn't do things after work after a while because she was running the marathon for one of Annika's charities. And everyone then went, "Oh, you are an inspiration, Clemmy." So they started. So it had just got out of control. So she had a baby.
Okay.
So he went off on maternity leave.
That doesn't get rid of her forever, though.
No, I know. She might be coming back. I am actually writing a sitcom at the moment.
It's a brilliant idea. It's just it's such a funny thing. It's a crazy but brilliant thing to do, which sort of sums it's Annika Rice, isn't it?
Well,
this is who you are. It's crazy.
It was a period of my life when I had the kids and, I just didn't want that world at the moment. You know, I was busy painting and just doing different things. And so it sort of, it enabled me to have one foot in the door, if you like, and still feel part of that exciting show busy world without actually ever doing any work. But the thing is, Clemmie unwittingly did become this quite dark, malevolent force in my life. You know, she, I remember there was one job where I was invited to have a detox up the Himalayas, some side of colonic irrigation up the Himalayas is how it was put.
I think I was offered that one as well. I didn't do that.
Are you?
Yeah, I was offered that one.
But Clemmie said Annika would love to do that more than anything in the world. But she can't go, but could I instead? And it was just getting difficult. So she had to go. Sometimes you do have to kill off the things you love, Richard.
Yeah, well, like, you know, I myself work a lot with alternate versions of myself. That's what I do in the snooker that is being postponed tonight.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, and, you know, and I do a lot with ventriloquist dummies now as well. So I do, and I think we're on the same page.
Have you got a dummy there? I've got lots
of dummies here for you.
I would like to see.
I'll show you the respect.
Feel quite embarrassed because
that's me. Look at that. That's me. I see. That's quite an easy one to do because it's got the same
legs
as me. This is what started it. This is my great granddad made this one. That's where it began. So this is a bit scary, but this is, and he's a bit broken.
God.
This is Ali. Hello, Annika. It's lovely to meet you. You're a lovely girl and a little drunk.
That's your grandfather's.
My great grandfather made it, so it was made in 1892.
That's such a nice legacy.
It is.
Isn't that lovely? Do you have that?
Except I just use it for swearing, so I don't think he'd be very happy. But luckily, he's dead.
When you're with your kids, you just bring up the puppet and swear profanities, and then say to the kids, "It wasn't me."
Basically, the kids do like they like the King of the World, who's disappeared. This is the King of the World. That's the King of the World. That's the King of the World. There you go. But, you know, you can tune into this one on a different day. That's Thursday nights on Twitch, the Twitch channel.
Oh, I'm going to do Thursday nights. That's going to be me.
you should have a Twitch. You should definitely have a Twitch channel. I mean, I think that might...
Love that.
Yeah. I think that Mark Curry... It's the Mark Curry story is just the... It's the rudeness of just going with putting these two people together just because there's no reason you and Mark Curry should be together.
Never even met the guy.
That is what TV has become. I thought of one while you were talking. We get Johnny Depp, Stephen Fry and Zoe Ball and you, and then we can have deep fry rice balls.
Richard, you're good.
So that it's the four of you all hosting a show, dear.
Keep this going, please? Yeah. Can we open this up to your audience? Because this could run and run.
I'm sure they will come up with many, many things. So we don't need to worry about that too much. So, so you look, well, we've nearly done an hour already, Annika. It's crazy. I haven't even asked you any emergency questions. I'm going to ask you.
How are you, though? Can we just get back to you, Richard?
I'm all right.
How are you?
Well, I'm
clear. How are your nether regions? How's it all going on down there?
Well, I'm preferring it. I think
because you've just got one now.
I've just got one, and it's kind of gone quite central. They were quite big. Especially the one that was gone was quite a big one, and it got bigger. That's why it became a problem. And it's just a lot more comfortable with that. I mean, you know, this
is sort of like elephantitis size, you know.
It was always, it got a bit nearly to that size, but it was always, even before it was a problem, it was a bit big. And now I go running and just put on, you used to have to adjust yourself and do all sorts. And now it's just bang and you're running. It's not getting in the way. It's not wobbling around. Yeah. It's good. And, you know, I've got two kids. I don't need any more kids. So there's still a backup boy there.
But I was going to say, there's still enough in one little sack, isn't there?
There is. So
you have millions more with that little sack.
It's always a dream of mine to talk to you about my balls, Annika, and thank you for making that come true. My deep fried rice balls.
Enough. That's fine.
I'll ask you in a minute. I'm going to ask you a couple of emergency questions, just because I should. This is what I do. They're fine. Don't have to worry.
Okay.
I will ask you, Annika Rice, have you ever seen a ghost? I'm interested to hear.
Yes. Well, I haven't seen one, but I've heard one.
Have you?
Not even joking. This is, we had a house for a while in the countryside. And when the children were very little, when they were in bed, we'd be sitting down watching the telly and we'd hear footsteps across the, you know, above us. Mm. And the kids were very little, so they weren't of an age where they'd get out and make such heavy footsteps. So we'd run up and think, it's weird, what's that? And there was just definitely someone up there walking around. Yeah. But weirdly, it never felt frightening.
It might have been someone living in the attic, just came down every now and again for chips.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
That's much more, more scary than a ghost, isn't it?
But we had a friend of mine who did see a ghost.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I think, but I didn't find it frightening. I just thought it was rather sweet because the house we lived in did used to be a sweet shop. So I just thought, you know. Got to be a nice ghost, isn't it?
Yeah, but again, I hate to bring in, you've got such a positive outlook on the world. What I think about Sweet Shop is that it's either going to be nice or it's going to be really unpleasant, and that some horrible man came to get a pocket full of sweets to tempt children away, died in your attic, and then he's stomping around going, why did I die up here? I had a pocket full of sweets. I was ready to go. And then because I was trying to kidnap kids, the villagers killed me in the attic, and now I'll be here forever. That's what I think that ghost was.
I'm glad I wasn't living with you at the time, because at the time we thought it was a really friendly ghost and we let it go. And in the end, we couldn't even be bothered to go and check on the kids because we knew something was going on up there, but didn't seem to affect anyone. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take you saying I'm glad I wasn't living with you at the time to mean that you would have been glad to live with me at another time. And I'm taking that as a huge victory for myself. I'm interested in this because your art, which we can see behind you, I'll just put you on your own and so people can see. This is incredible, beautiful art that you're doing behind you. And I was interested in... I have a question about if all the world's art galleries and museums got together and said, we love you, Annika, we love all the charity work you've done and all your TV shows, and we've decided to gift you one item from any museum or art gallery in the world that you can keep. Is there a work of art or an artefact that you would like to have in your house?
Suddenly we seem to have gone quite highbrow.
I thought I'd end highbrow after
slightly
all the pedo jokes.
Me. Well, I think I would have one of Rodin's sculptures.
Okay, that's nice. Is there a particular one you like?
No, but I have got, if I could just go in that room, I could bring you this beautiful book I've got of all his line drawings and sculptures.
Sure.
And I just love his energy.
And was painting something you were always doing, you know, from a little, or was this come up when you...
When I was a schoolgirl, I was honestly too busy ferrying my little sister to nursery and trying to get through physics and chemistry and all my work. I never saw an art room at school. Yeah. I never did art at school. And it was only later... my husband at the time gave me a book called Step by Step Art School and an easel and a smock, because I wanted to be more like a Jane Austen heroine, because I'd just always been working all my life. I hadn't ever learnt anything. I didn't feel I had any accomplishments.
Sure.
So I took up the piano and I took up painting and I did a bit of singing just so that I could be like a Jane Austen heroine.
Right.
And painting has led me on the most lovely adventures. I mean, the most recent lovely adventure and friendship that's happened is that Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones just got in touch out of the blue and said, I really like your line drawings. This is when I actually had a website up. There's not one up at the moment. I'm so embarrassed to say. I haven't got my act together on this at all. But, and, you know, through that, through a chat about art, he then said, come out and hear us play in Paris. And I just, you know, got out there and I'm backstage with Ronnie in his dressing room thinking, this is so exciting. And it's all because of painting and art. And I've had many adventures like that. There's something about people who paint. Why are you laughing?
I'm just because your life is an adventure. Everything in your life is an adventure. Just this, everything just... Because of your attitude, it's absolutely your attitude that makes it happen, but everything happens to you. It's brilliant.
Well, no, but everything happens to everyone, but you've just got to open yourself up to opportunities. Because I just think fate, life is just a fateful journey, isn't it? And one, talk about sliding doors, you know, one step that way or one the other way. Leads to something completely different.
You're right. And do you regret? I know that you were interviewed by Cubby Broccoli to be a Bond girl, and you gave him short shrift.
I really regret that now. I was so bloody women's libby and feminist. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm proud of that, but I'm quite annoyed at my younger self, because when he asked me to come along and talk to him, I thought he meant to be Bond. So I went along thinking, yeah, that'll work. That'll be good. I could do my own stunts. I'm up for that. I'm, you know, 26 at the time, whatever. And then he talks about being a Bond girl. And I went, oh, and just literally walked out, you know, just wasn't interested in that. And so, yeah, there's lots of things like
that. I think that was the right decision, though. I mean, you know, because I think also at that time, those films would, you know, it'd sort of be nice to be in them, but it would also, you'd have just been in bed with Roger Moore and then shot by someone. That's all that would have happened to you.
I wouldn't mind being pussy galore coming out of the beach with a gun down her pants.
Okay. We can work that. We can arrange that. Even that could still, it could definitely still.
My bucket list.
We've got Fleabag's writing them now, so we can get Annika Rice in there. We can get you in a Bond film, no problem at all.
No, but you know what I mean? I realised later that if I'm going to be on Spitting Image, you know, giving birth with a camera up my birth canal, I might as well just have a bikini walking. You know what I mean? It's I didn't have perspective.
Yeah.
In the early days, because it was all just so overwhelming what was happening.
So are we going to do more stand-up once we're back in clubs? Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And as I said, I'm hoping that Clemmy will come back as a sitcom.
Yeah.
But, because there's she had a lot of adventures. So I'd love doing the stand-up, Richard. You guys, girls, have just been having such a nice time, and I had no idea it was so blissful. I really enjoyed
it. Yeah, but it's the right personality to do it, but also it is, I think, people who've lived a life and then come to it and have stories to tell, that doesn't happen so much anymore. So I kind of like people coming to it a bit later. Because you've lived a life and then you've got stuff to talk about. And I think, you know, I think that's that head, the one about head, the head, the, that kind of head, is such a lot, you know, when it can take you into your own head as well as this false head, that's a brilliant show. So you must take it to Edinburgh. You could win Best Newcomer at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Do you know, Richard, can I just say you're being terribly nice?
I'd only have people on here I like, and I love you, Annika Rice.
But I hope we meet. And can I just say, I love doing your wife's podcast. I was thinking of it the other day, and could you ask her if I could come back and do another one? Because I really enjoyed it. I didn't understand the premise at all. I hadn't done any research. I turned up, we did it in the Isle of Wight.
That's right, solving a
crime, slightly drunk.
Yes, sometimes very drunk with my wife. My wife's the drunkest one.
Oh, she, yes.
I think she was ill, though. I think at the Isle of Wight one, she'd got food poisoning or something. Because I think it wasn't the drink, so I don't think she hung around, did she? If I'm right, I might be wrong about that, but she did get very ill.
It went in a whirl, because suddenly, I talk about surreal life, suddenly I'm in Ventnor in the Isle of Wight with some strange comedians, and we're drinking quite a lot and talking about a crime that we're solving. But it was really good fun.
It's good.
I didn't know what it was, really, but it was good fun.
Yeah, all right. Don't support my podcast by saying how good my wife's podcast is. Also, you're just saying I'm going to be up with you, and then you brought my wife up and ruined everything, Annika Rice. Oh, right there.
Do you sit at the breakfast table comparing audience figures and things?
No, we do not do that. We're very... I try to be funny. No, I like being funny all the time, but my wife is certainly in the morning is not in the mood for laughs.
Oh, God.
I'm very bright in the morning and ready to go, and my wife is... It takes her a little time to get ready to go.
Crank up.
It does.
So do you do all the early morning sort of children?
I tend to. So I I've got a bit more patience with the kids in the morning, and I enjoy them being sort of naughty, which she doesn't enjoy them being naughty. It's probably the perfect way to parent, isn't it, right? She's a bit stricter than I am.
I know, because I was bringing up my kids largely on their own. I brought them up completely. I didn't really think. I had to sort of bring them up quite gender neutral in a way, quite ahead of the time, because I didn't have time to do all that thing of going to football matches because they were boys.
Yeah.
So one boy called himself Nicola Wendy for a whole year at nursery school, and we just put his name on the peg, and the teacher was fine. He just called himself Nicola Wendy. And I kind of, you know, another child just wanted to wear a bucket on his head for quite a long time. I quite like that, you know, letting them sort of
absolutely. Well, it's terrible when it gets, you know, that's it. My son's a little bit the same like that, and he loves because he looks up to his sister so much. He loves dress. He dresses up. He got an the whatever the Anna or from Frozen. He got the other dress of the other one for Christmas because he wanted to play with his sister. And to discourage that would seem so weird, you know. And people.
I know. I think it's just really sad if because boys just love wearing fairy dresses.
Yeah.
It turns out, who knew? And it's so weird. Me having all these very girly, you know, not girly boys even, but just they love dressing up and, you know, whatever. And as a child, I was such a tomboy and just always wore dungarees and was sat on a roof with a dumper truck, you know, playing dinky toys. So it wasn't as if I was foistering sort of pink onto them.
You know, it's so difficult to know. That's the thing. You don't know what you're doing subconsciously. You don't know what effect you're having. And whether it's nature versus nurture. It's a very good subject for a stand-up show. You'll do that. You could do that one next, Annika.
I'll get on to that. Thank you.
One of Shakespeare's main themes. I'm sure you can beat him at that. You can beat anyone. Look, I'm going to let you go. I would happily talk to you for the rest of your life. I hope I get to see you. And my wife will be delighted how much you love her.
I love her.
Damn. So close. You can come and live with us. We could be a throuple.
We could all meet on the riverbank and ignore each other.
Okay, let's do that.
Next time.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm really looking forward to seeing your shows when you come back. And I'm very looking forward to that sitcom, which will be fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing goddess Annika Rice, thank you very much. We'll be back next week. Haven't got a guest yet. I was too excited about having Annika Rice on. See ya. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest Annika Rice. Oh, Annika. Annika Rice, I wanna thank ya for being so nice. Oh, Annika. Annika Rice. That music was written by some guys at university. I think they might have been called the Barstooly Generation. They might have involved Al Murray in there somewhere. I'm not sure. I'd like to thank Chris Evans, not that one, who I'm indebted to. Also, Mark at the British Comedy Guide, who always does fantastic work for us. Ben Walker for lovely work putting together our advertisements at the moment. He will be back as well, I'm sure, when we're doing live ones. And everyone at Acast, then everyone, my mum and dad, and everyone who knows me. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not head to GoFasterStripe.com/badges, become a monthly badger. You can give us £3 a month, and in return we will give you a membership pack, some badges, access to the backstage area of rahulastapa.co.uk, where you get advance warning of upcoming live guests, plus much more information, live shows, stand-up shows, and extra backstage videos. There's hundreds of those. There's a lot of stuff and more stuff beyond that. And all of your money will be plowed back into making more content for you. Or if you're watching on Twitch and you're with Amazon Prime, you can connect your accounts and give us £5 every single month at no extra cost to yourself out of Ian Amazon's pocket. So please do that if you can. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here for me. Do tell your friends about the show if you enjoyed it. Thanks. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.